Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Incident response planning is proving to be one of the most effective defenses against cyber risk. According to Marsh McLennan Cyber Risk Intelligence Center's latest report, organizations that conduct regular response exercises are significantly less likely to experience a breach-related claim. The report underscores how proactive planning not only strengthens recovery after an attack, but also reduces overall risk exposure, making it a critical control for insurers and insureds alike. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best Audio, and joining us now to discuss that and other key findings from the report is Matt Berninger. He's Senior Vice President and Principal Cyber Analyst at Marsh McLennan Cyber Risk Intelligence Center. Matt, welcome. So great to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt, how is incident response planning changing the way insurers evaluate cyber risk and price policies?
At Marsh McLennan, we're a cyber insurance broker. And so we manage the relationship between customers and insurers. And what we're seeing is really kind of most across the board, while it varies, there's generally a minimum bar approach taken to some of these controls when underwriting cyber policies. So things like incident response planning, but other things like endpoint detection response, logging, security awareness training. Oftentimes insurers are looking for kind of a minimum bar to get over in order to be insurable or to have a policy. Beyond that, it does vary on what types of questions, how deep the analysis is of the implementation of those controls. Frankly, one of the things we hope to get out of this report that we published was increasing the understanding of implementation of those controls, whether it's incident response or EDR or MFA or something like that. So to answer your question, generally kind of a minimum bar approach. And then beyond that minimum, it does vary as far as the further questions that may get asked.
Regular tabletop exercises and scenario-based drills have been shown to reduce cyber events. Matt, how did these practices translate into measurable risk reduction for insurers?
Yeah, so I'll clarify. The study that we did, we actually drew correlations between the presence of habits like doing regular tabletops, incident response exercises, or incident response planning, et cetera. And that correlation correlated with a reduction in expected breach rates. We were not able to prove a causal relationship between, incident response planning and a reduction in breach rates. But what we suspect may be happening here is that the habits of going through incident response planning, tabletop exercises, and walking through those scenarios has positive effects on other parts of a security program. So in addition to making organizations more resilient to cyber breaches, in which case maybe a small breach is prevented from becoming a big breach, it also may highlight security gaps in their program, which they then go and fix or improve. So you may encounter that during a tabletop, for example, when you walk through a backup from or restore from backup scenario, you may find out actually you haven't really practiced that restoration and you need to go make sure you can do it well. And that will actually improve some of the questions you may have in other places on your insurance application. Additionally, if you find out that your email security may be lacking or certain parts of your privilege access management may be lacking, you may find that out during the exercise, but then you'll go and fix it perhaps. And that improves your overall security posture. So we like to think of it as not just a good player on the security team, but a player that we think makes the other players on the team better.
When you look at key controls like endpoint detection and response, logging and awareness training, how are insurers factoring in the effectiveness of those controls when underwriting policies?
Sure. Great question. So there's been kind of a general trend over the last 5 years, sort of starting in 2019 to 2020. We saw a lot more emphasis on questions around the presence of those controls, things like, do you have EDR? Do you have MFA? Now there are more questions around the implementation. for example, multi-factor authentication, MFA. Now it's more, well, tell me more about the implementation you have there. Is it SMS based? Is it email, second email based? Is it endpoint certificate based? So we do see and we do collect in our application and as part of the study, you can see the differentiation between what's called phishing resistant and non-phishing resistant forms of MFA. Additionally, for EDR, one of the biggest signals that we have in the report is around how well deployed the EDR is. We've seen attackers, very much so this year, in fact, actively avoiding endpoints that have EDR deployed to them and encrypting entire networks from unmonitored assets. That's become a pretty standard tactic for a lot of ransomware groups. And so pushing out those EDR agents to everywhere that you possibly can is increasingly important. And we see that in the data, and that's a question that insurers are now asking. Additionally, things like configuring and blocking mode and other things like that. So we now, you know, we see in applications not just the presence question, but also the configuration questions.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
From an insurer's perspective, Matt, how does proactive incident response planning influence both the frequency and severity of breach-related claims?
Got it. Well, so we see a correlation with frequency. We can't draw a causal relationship to frequency. We're hoping to gather more forensically detailed information on claims so that we can draw those causal relationships. But we do see a strong correlation between, again, the habits of going through incident response planning and tabletops and a reduction in breach rate or frequency. There's been a lot of literature and that initial finding was frankly surprising for me as an incident responder. I wouldn't have thought that incident response planning would prevent or have a correlation rather with a reduction in breach rate. But again, per previous question, we think that it's driving positive security behaviors in other parts of the program. From a severity perspective, there's been a lot of literature written about the reduction in severity, right? And that is, I think, a little bit more of a easier causal relationship to draw. That if you practice your incident response plan and you walk through it, then when there is a breach or an incident, you're going to be far better prepared to limit the scope of that incident, to communicate better, to handle things like regulatory issues, litigation issues, public relations issues. Frankly, when you look at claims and the damage associated with claims, a lot of people like to focus on, you know, the headline grabbing stuff, like whether, you know, ransom payments or kind of the upfront costs of it. But a lot of the costs of breaches these days are having to do with those long tail of either business interruption because there's no business continuity planning, privacy issues because you haven't, you know, fully understood the privacy regulation implications of a breach in all the different regions and jurisdictions you may be operating. So a lot of people like to focus on, a lot of articles you read will focus on the sort of like cat and mouse ransomware gang part of the incident, but actually a lot of the costs are outside of that. They have to do with privacy, they have to do with business interruption, et cetera. And that's where incident response planning can really help you limit those losses.
Since strong cyber controls only work if deployed and maintained effectively, how can insurers support policyholders in strengthening their implementation and management? And what guidance does Marsh McLennan Cyber Risk Intelligence Center provide to your clients in this area?
Oh, certainly. So yeah, I like to say that, cyber insurance, I come from an operational background, a cyber operations background, and I've been at Marsh McLennan now 2.5 years. Cyber insurance, in my perspective, is a really effective way to connect the otherwise technical aspect of cybersecurity with the financial risk management parts of an organization. And so it really creates a strong coupling between those parts of the organization. And that's where you see a lot of positive incentives and sort of virtuous feedback. So what at Marsh McLennan, when we work with our customers, you know, cyber insurance brokerage is obviously a huge part of what we do, but that's just sort of the beginning. Beyond that, we then will help them understand additional investments that they can make into their portfolio, prioritizing those investments, and then going so far as to actually find, you know, providers of those services or products that they may be looking for. So that's a huge part. You know, getting an insurance policy is an important part of risk management, but it's not all of it. Going out and making sure that you have a strategy to improve your security controls year over year, staying on top of what's coming, you know, coming up next, because this game moves very quickly. That's something we actively do with our customers. And then additionally, carriers have services like that as well. They may have incentives for, you know, patching vulnerabilities or deploying things like EDR. So different carriers and different insurers have different things like that. But we're seeing more of that stuff in the marketplace, where you've got your insurance policy, but now there's more of an active role in improving the security year over year. And we actually see that companies that have insurance tend to improve their security continually and do so oftentimes faster than those that don't.
Matt, looking ahead, what emerging trends or control strategies in cyber risk management should insurers be most aware of over the next 1 to 3 years?
Yeah, so I mean, it wouldn't be a cybersecurity conversation in 2025 without saying AI. So I'll rip off the Band-Aid there. hopefully please the AI gods. So that's certainly one, right? But you can kind of, and I am currently rolling my eyes when I say it, but it is an important aspect to really get a governance handle on first. What we're seeing right now is approaching, you know, governance frameworks. What is your process for even implementing monitoring AI? Again, it's easy, or at least for me as a practitioner, you often want to go into the weeds of things like prompt injection or, you know, different attack vectors. Zooming out is where we see a lot of effective strategies right now for large organizations. Zooming out and saying, okay, what is my AI governance strategy? Where am I placing AI services? How am I connecting? What are my supply chain risks? So really approaching it from that perspective, that's going to be, I think, it is now and it will continue to be an important aspect. And again, we see AI really as an accelerator of existing risks, not as a wholesale new risk in and of itself. It is, you know, sort of being implemented in all parts of organizations from, you know, obviously the technology stack, but also things like human resources and even like customer relations. So AI really is an accelerator across existing lines of risk. And that's what we're seeing in general. So AI is certainly one. The other one is really that I mentioned earlier, business continuity planning. That is where a lot of, you know, very large impacts can occur. And particularly for what we'll call sort of like low downtime industries, whether it's manufacturing, healthcare, transportation, other ones, we're seeing, you know, a lot of events occurring in that space. And while, you know, prevention, working towards prevention and resilience is important, really that business continuity planning aspect is so important, because how are you going to continue to perform operations to serve patients, for example, in a hospital if you do have an attack? Additionally, not just responding to the attack, but at what points are you going to make decisions to shut down services? How do you inform those decisions? We see that a lot in manufacturing, for example. So this goes back to what we've been talking about this whole time, which is incident response planning. Walk through those scenarios. Don't just look at it as a cybersecurity problem that needs to be solved with ones and zeros, but see it as a business problem that needs to be solved with processes, cross-functional communication. It really is a company-wide issue or organization-wide issue that needs to be communicated, and not just some sort of digital cat and mouse game that gets played on computers.
Matt, this has been fascinating, so informative, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great chatting.
That was Matt Berninger, Senior Vice President and Principal Cyber Analyst at Marsh McLennan Cyber Risk Intelligence Center. For AM Best Audio, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that.
Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.